Remember, Alexa, what's in the news? Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us. Have a good day.
And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. We start out with open talk today. We'll have guests later on the program. Guests from the Center for Community Resources will be stopping by. They're headquartered on South Main Street, downtown. If you've not been in the building, I'm sure you've noticed it. It's right across the street from Miller Shoes, as a matter of fact. Center for Community Resources. So we'll talk with them a little bit later on the program today. And we're also chatting today with Emile DeAndres, who has written an interesting memoir, partly about baseball, partly about life, partly about dealing with serious illness. He was a promising young pitcher in baseball. Left-hander yet, which makes you even more promising if you're a pitcher. And he very suddenly, unexpectedly developed rheumatoid arthritis. Sad story, because that was the end of his career instantly, and he was only in his early 20s. He's written about it. We'll talk to him about it. Emile DeAndres. He lives out in the San Francisco area, I believe. He's out in California. I know that. We'll be talking with him on the telephone a little bit later on the program today. So that's our lineup of guests for the program today. Open talk to begin with, 283-2525, 283-2525. I have been interested in the reaction on social media, and on regular media for that matter, on the coverage of Hurricane Irma this past weekend. I didn't see any of this reaction after Hurricane Harvey 2 weeks ago. It's over 2 weeks ago now, that caused all that horrible flooding in Texas and Louisiana. But there's been quite a backlash against the TV coverage of Irma over the weekend. Some folks think it was overdone. There's been backlash over so many of the reporters being out in the teeth of the storm, hanging onto a railing or a lamppost or something like that to keep from being blown over. Some of them were blown over. There's been the Twitter world went crazy about this over the weekend. It was certainly unavoidable, the coverage over the weekend. I didn't watch a whole lot of TV over the weekend, but every time you turned it on, it was all Irma, right? And not just on the Weather Channel. All the cable news channels went wall-to-wall with coverage of Irma as well. Now, was that overdone? I don't think so. I mean, there was other stuff on TV if you didn't want to watch it. You weren't forced to watch the hurricane coverage. But on the other hand, there's some people that yesterday, the day after the worst of the storm in Florida, some people were saying, well, it didn't turn out to be nearly as bad as they thought it was going to be, yada, yada, yada. Well, first of all, I'm not sure that that's correct. They are now finding, we're getting reports today that they're finding bodies, particularly in the Florida Keys, which just got absolutely slammed. The eye of the hurricane went right into the Keys. What did you want? Did you want spectacular damage, hundreds of people dead? I mean, for goodness sakes. And the news media didn't make up the hurricane warnings. That's the National Hurricane Center. And they're simply reporting the You know, the strength of the storm, for a long time it was Category 5. That's the strongest storm that there is. There is not a Category 6. Cat 5 is as high as it goes. And it went down to Cat 4. I don't know exactly what it was when it hit the Florida mainland. It was either 4 or maybe briefly 5. But the difference is negligible. We're still talking about 100-mile-an-hour winds. So, I mean, when you know, especially the cable news channels, CNN and Fox and MSNBC, that's what they do. When major stories like this occur, they cover it. And they, in many cases, they brought their frontline people on and worked them over the weekend, even in the middle of the night sometimes. So, I don't think you can fault the news media. I mean, what if there had been hundreds of people dead? Now, it doesn't look like it's going to be that many. Hopefully it won't. But, and the media didn't cover it heavily, then what would people have said? Well, why didn't they warn us? Why didn't they warn us? And even with the warnings, there were some people who said, we're not leaving. We're riding it out. So I don't think you can fault the media for the coverage, the amount of coverage, let's put it that way. Now, if you're talking about having reporters out in the teeth of the storm, maybe you can debate that. Maybe you can debate that. I find it kind of silly myself. I saw one particular piece over the weekend. I don't know who the reporter was. It was someone I'd never seen before. I know I was watching MSNBC because she was a Weather Channel person, and NBC owns the Weather Channel, so they can go back and forth with their reporters. But this was a young woman, appeared to be fairly young, I don't know, 25, something like that. And she was out on the, I believe it was in Miami, she was out on the edge of a pier. And the ocean was already up to the pier, starting to slop over it. The wind was blowing like crazy. And all I'm thinking the whole time she's on is, she's going to get blown right into the harbor there, which was a boiling pot. There were other people who, and I didn't see any people getting blown over. I guess it happened on some of the channels. But they were saying, why do they have these reporters out there? Why? It's what they do. They're reporters. I think they were trying to make sure that the doubters, people realize just how bad it was when you see somebody out there getting blown around. And I haven't heard of anybody getting hurt. That's good news. And if you hang on to a light post and the wind's blowing, okay. I saw another feature, and I don't know what channel this was on that I was watching, but there was, a woman reporter out in the street in, I think she was in Fort Myers. At any rate, there were trees down all around her in the street. And then she goes over and she touches this piece, I don't know, it looked like a metal awning or something. Says, and this is blown off. And what I'm thinking is, why the heck isn't she wearing a hard hat? What's she doing out there anyway? With trees blown all over the place and branches and awnings and so on. I mean, that just seemed kind of silly. What did you think of the coverage? Overall, I'd give it an A. I don't think the news media, the cable news channels, overhyped it. They were simply reporting the statistics from what the National Weather Service said, and if in some cities it turned out to be not quite so bad, well, that's good. In other cities, it was much worse. Then Jacksonville got slammed yesterday. Heard a report this morning on CBS Radio here on WISR that Jacksonville was underwater, almost the whole city. Miami ended up getting hit a little bit harder than was believed. So, I guess they're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, They run the risk of overhyping it, and by the same token, they run the risk of not giving people enough warning. And if it got repetitious for you, turn the TV off or watch something else. Phone number is 283-2525. It's Open Talk here on the program today, 283-2525, Open Talk. I would give the news coverage an A, the TV coverage an A. I didn't see anything particularly wrong with it. And one other thing. The National Weather Service kept changing the predicted path of the storm. Did you notice that over the weekend? You know, first everybody thought I was going to go up the east coast of Florida. Ended up thinking it was going to go up the west coast. And it kind of went up the middle. So, and you can't fault the TV people for that. You know, they're working on these various computer models that are put out by the National Hurricane Center. And those folks were doing their best. You know, they got people flying through these. That's a job that I would not want. What do they call them? Hurricane hunters. And they go up in planes and they fly right through these hurricanes to measure pressure and wind speed and all this. My first reaction to that is you got to be nuts, you know. If I'm on a plane and there's even a little bit of turbulence, you get kind of queasy. Can you imagine flying through a hurricane on purpose? God bless them. They do it for the protection of all, you know. I guess those are like super strong planes, too, you know, reinforced planes or something like that. I mean, you can't reinforce a plane so much. You can't build it like a tank or it's never going to take off. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk here on the program today, 283-2525. And by the way, thanks to the many people from our area who have headed south to help out either in Texas or Florida. We had a report earlier today of, what was the woman's name? I'm searching for it here. Donna Bachman of Butler is down in Florida volunteering with the Red Cross right now, working to helping to shelter people. So Godspeed to her, and thank goodness for the Red Cross volunteers. Open talk at 283-2525. I have not seen former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on TV yet today. I will probably do my best to avoid it tonight. Her book comes out today. I got to be honest with you. It's hard for me to keep up with Hillary Clinton's books. I thought she already wrote one. Am I wrong on that? I don't read biographies. So. But anyway, she's got another one about why she lost the presidential election last year. And from what I saw on TV last night, she said, well, it was a Russian. You know, no question it was a Russian. There were some stories last week, I guess previews from the book, I don't know, where she was beating up on Trump for stalking her during one of the presidential debates, coming up behind her whenever she was talking. And she felt like she was being stalked. And she said, oh, I should have done his turn around and told him to back off. So, you know, when people that have the pull, they got the juice, and they're releasing a book, they're able to do this. They, you know, they tease with little excerpts and so on and so forth. But why can't Hillary Clinton just admit she lost because not a whole lot of people like her? It's as simple as that. Sure, there were other factors, but she was terribly unliked. And it was a terribly poor choice by the Democrats to nominate her. I don't know what they were thinking. By the way, I said this last year before she was nominated, too. It was just a bad candidate, you know? You have to think that almost anybody else would have beaten Trump. But there were, I talked to any number of people who, you know, you'd be talking about the election. Was it only a year ago that we were being bombarded with debates and campaign ad? There were a lot of people who just can't stand Hillary Clinton. And I talked to more than one person who said, I wouldn't vote for her for anything, let alone president. And this individual didn't even want to, wasn't even interested in the debates or discussing the issues or anything else. He didn't like her. Simple as that. And I know that was the case for a lot of people. Why the Democrats... I think there are a lot of Democrats who really understand that now. And I think if they had their druthers, they'd just like her to shut up, you know. Okay, you lost. It was embarrassing. Go away. You know, get out of the headlines, for goodness sakes. Stop trying to blame your loss on a whole bunch of other things. Write a whole book about it, for goodness sakes. She's going to be all over TV tonight. I know that. I'm not watching. She lost because there's a whole lot of people who can't stand her. 283-2525 283-2525 is the number. It's open talk on the program today. 283-2525. There's a lot of people that can't stand Trump either. You know, I mean, it cuts both ways. But Hillary Clinton was unpopular years ago, long before she ever ran for president. Open talk on the program, 283-2525, the number 283-2525. Nice to have you with us here on a Tuesday. Pretty nice day. It's not perfect. It's not as beautiful as yesterday, but it's not bad. It's nice to be warm for a change. We had temperatures so far below normal for the last 2 weeks. Nice to warm up. Let's go to the people. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
A quick comment about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
Yes.
Actually, Hillary did win the popular vote. So there are a lot more people that liked her than really liked him.
Well, 3 million to be exact. I think she won the popular vote by 3 million, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're absolutely correct. My point was, I guess I made it. There were just a lot of people who intimated to me that they wouldn't vote for her no matter who was running against her. You understand the point?
There's no question about that. And there were, even the Bush family wouldn't vote for Donald Trump.
True.
Yeah. They wouldn't vote for her, but that's okay too. But at any rate.
What do you think about that? I mean, Trump won fair and square. We use the Electoral College system, whether you like it or not. I don't particularly like it. I think it's outdated. It's 250 years old, for goodness sakes. We're the only country in the world, I think, that uses such a system. I'll take that back. I think there's some country in Asia that uses that system. But most countries, most democracies just go by the popular vote, you know.
I would tend to agree with that. That's my personal opinion. And, of course, it's up to Congress to change that. And, of course, it's up to Congress to change a lot of things that Congress just isn't interested in changing. And that's the sad part about our particular form of government here. But the other thing that I called in about,
yes,
is the coverage of Irma.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, we have family in Florida, so I was glued to the TV. So I was fine with the coverage. Our family was fine, so that's a good thing. But for the numbers of people who have family or friends who live in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, who were anxious for whatever information, I think it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I have about the storm, and it includes Harvey, Democrats in Congress have made a deal with our president that about funding for Harvey. And we know that it's not nearly enough. And now we have Irma to deal with. And there are certain important items that the federal government or the state government have to help people with in these kinds of emergencies. And people just are totally against taxes. But that's the only way that these folks can be helped, these emergency situations. There's an earthquake in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexican government doesn't have enough money to help those folks or to deal with that whole situation. And I know that the U.S. has sent help for that. And those kinds of things arise anywhere and everywhere. And, again, I guess I'm beating a dead horse, too. People just don't want to pay taxes. They think that taxes is unnecessary, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? When they need help, who do they turn to?
Well, what I would like to see, by the way, where does this federal money come from? And suddenly what was it, $15 billion? Is that what they approved for Harvey? I don't know. I assume the total for Irma is going to be much, much more. My goodness, the whole state of Florida is, devastated. I don't know what that bill is going to come from, going to be. But, it occurs to me, do we have excess federal money sitting in the bank somewhere that we can draw down?
Well, we're going to raise the debt ceiling. Isn't that part of the answer?
So we just sell more T-bills, huh?
I guess.
I don't know who's buying those these
days. And, of course, the Republicans are dead against raising the debt ceiling, and that's what held up the Republicans dealing with Harvey and, you know, helping Texas and helping now Florida. Obviously, Irma was a whole lot bigger, covered a whole lot more states. Georgia's highly impacted. I believe that Alabama or Mississippi, but South Carolina, it was a huge storm.
They're all going to ask for federal aid, federal disaster declarations, of course. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm not decrying the fact that we're helping out. I didn't mean it that way. My only question was, you know, where does this money come from?
That's a big
chunk of change, you know.
And I'm sure we have an emergency fund, but everybody should have an emergency fund. But then, of course, the other thing that couple other things. First of all, the folks who can afford to live in Miami Beach and Palm Beach and the Keys, those folks probably have the resources, or they should have the resources, to rebuild themselves. And I'm sure they're going to take whatever the government is willing to give them. And secondly, I'd rather spend the money helping those folks rebuild, and there's millions of them that really need help, rather than build the wall.
Well, I can certainly agree with you on that. One final question while I have you. Do you think Hillary should just go away and, stop writing books about why she lost?
I think this book is ill-conceived. I think she can write books about her philosophies and things that maybe she's made mistakes that she can help other people. The living presidents have gotten together and made some kind of an effort to help with the Harvey and Irma.
Yeah, I've seen that TV spot, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that there are other avenues for her. I'm not interested in reading a book about why she lost.
No, me neither.
It's redundant. And
yes.
We don't care.
It's over. Go away.
Yeah.
Thanks,
okay.
My friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525, Open Talk. Yesterday, marking of 16 years since the 9/11 terrorist attack. 16 years. Wow. Pretty impressive ceremony down in Shanksville, where they unveiled plans for the final piece for the national park down there. A 93-foot memorial tower in memory of those who died on Flight 93, 93 feet high. Vice President Pence was there yesterday at Shanksville. Have any of you ever been there? Have you ever been to Shanksville? I was there, I don't know exactly when. It wasn't, you know, like 2 months after the incident, but it was years ago I was there. And there wasn't a whole lot there at the time. It is out in the middle of nowhere. It's near Somerset, but Shanksville is actually the name of the little village, and that's what it is. And it's not even in Shanksville. It's about a few miles from there. When I was there, it appeared to be an area that had been strip mining. In fact, as I recall now, there was a huge drag line that was parked, I don't know, a couple of fields away. I can remember seeing a silhouette of it, you know, like they use for strip mining coal. And it was just a field. When I was there, there was a cyclone fence, a chain link fence that had been put up. It was pretty big, pretty tall and pretty long, but that was about it. You know, they had leveled off a place where people could stand. They wanted to, and a lot of people were leaving mementos, remembrances at the fence. There were bouquets of flowers there and other stuff. But that was about it. You couldn't actually go down to where the plane had crashed. And I'm not sure, you can do that still yet. I think it's just kind of an overlook. It's a field that gently slopes down and then it very steeply drops off into the woods where the plane actually went down. I mean, it was very somber when I was there. But they've done a lot since then in terms of making it a national memorial. And the final piece was unveiled yesterday, and they expect it to be done by next year at this time, that new 93-foot tower. I have to go back. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you think they should make 9/11 a national holiday?
My first reaction would be no, but I'm interested in what you think. Do you think it should be a holiday?
I think it should.
And why would you think that?
Well, I mean, what happened was so terrible, and we lost so many people that I don't know. I just think it's better than maybe some other holiday that we have that isn't that important.
Mm-hmm. Are you close enough to turn your radio down just a little bit? Because we're getting...
I'm having trouble with my phone.
Oh, okay. We're getting a little bit of feedback. That's why I was asking if you could turn it down. No, that's okay. It's okay. Well, here's my thinking on it. Pearl Harbor Day isn't a national holiday, but we always remember it. It's always mentioned on the news, and I think there's a lot of families who would remember it privately as, December 7th, 1941. My first reaction is that we don't need to make it a holiday to remember it. I think everybody will remember it.
Right, right. But I don't know. I just thought and I thought the vice president did a wonderful job yesterday.
I thought he was terrific. Yeah. Mike Pence, he's a
caring man, I think.
Yeah, and he's a dignified guy. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him when he was, not pretty impressive. He was a governor of Indiana, I guess, right up until he was elected vice president. He gave that up when he became vice president. Do you think he's presidential material in the future?
He could be.
I don't know how old he is. I have no idea. I mean, he doesn't look like he's ancient or anything like that,
He just has the white hair.
Well, a lot of people have white hair, early. And I mean, I know guys that have white hair in their 40s, Well, I agree with you. I've been impressed with him at other times. I was particularly impressed with him yesterday down in Shanksville. And nice of him to come to Pennsylvania, too, by the way.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, my friend.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Sure, good to talk with you. 283-2525. Do you think September 11th should be made a holiday? I certainly don't mean to poo-poo. She's not the first one who's brought that up, by the way, on the program. I don't know. If you want my honest opinion, I think we have a few too many holidays as it is, quite frankly. Some of the stuff that we... and I don't want to start mentioning things because that makes everybody mad. But there are some days that are governmental holidays, and I just kind of think, I think I'd rather have everybody working and the government on some of the lesser holidays, okay? I'm not talking about Memorial Day or Veterans Day or some of the big ones, but some of the lesser ones, I don't know. I guess we're about out of time for Open Talk here. My goodness, I wasn't paying attention to the clock. We've got more Open Talk time tomorrow, I do believe, right, on tomorrow's program. Also tomorrow, we'll be talking with Jean Twenge. She is a psychologist at, where is she? It's out in California. San Diego State University. The topic will be, have smartphones ruined an up-and-coming generation? Now, that's a provocative topic, but she has examined the radical change in young people, teens and young adults, anybody born 1995 or later, And we will talk to her about a whole series of, some of them are pretty shocking, the changes even from just their parents' generation. And a lot of the rationale is because of, this is the first generation that has spent their entire adolescence with smartphones. They've never, since they were little kids, we little kids, they've never been in a world without smartphones. And the number of hours that the average, it's really incredible. I know it's like 6 or 7 hours a day. The average teen and young adult spends online in one way or another, either on a cell phone or a laptop or something. Not necessarily scary, but eye-opening. We'll talk about it tomorrow with Gene Tangi, one of our guests on the Wednesday show. Okay, we have to take a break here because we will be welcoming our first guest coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn. So please stick around, and we'll be back with more in just a couple of minutes.
As the sun rose on a warm spring morning, four travelers, known simply as the Daltons, rode into Gettysburg, PA. History has all but overlooked the Daltons' quest for fun activities. The Daltons found the options in Gettysburg nearly overwhelming. Segway tours of battlegrounds, biking, and horseback trails. And when Jeb, the youngest Dalton, saw Gettysburg's famed cyclorama, he was overheard to say, "Cool.
Make your own history. Visit DestinationGettysburg.com.
Central Electric Cooperative understands the importance of teaching electrical safety. Our free safety programs for adults and youth demonstrate electrical dangers. Our Safety City program is geared toward youth and can be brought to any organization, event, or school. It shows how to avoid everyday dangerous electrical situations. We offer live, high-voltage demonstrations at our headquarters in Parker for both adult and youth organizations. We also have a first responders electrical hazards training. First responders know emergencies can involve electric lines and equipment and are likely to be first on the scene. Our program helps them identify and handle situations involving electrical equipment and stay safe. Contact us today to schedule your free presentation. Together, we can save lives and prevent potentially hazardous electric-related situations. This is Renee Tritton for Central Electric Cooperative, powering everyday life for 80 years. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Attention Alexa users, did you know you can listen to WISR through your Amazon Echo? That's right. Alexa, play WISR.
Playing WISR.
WISR is proud to provide you with the music you love on the devices you use. Radio, computer, tablet, smartphone, and now your Amazon Alexa-enabled device. WISR, we're everywhere you are. Just ask Alexa.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Is it only Tuesday? I was talking about that with somebody at work this morning, and we both agreed. I said, doesn't it seem like it should be later than Tuesday? Oh, well, it's not a bad day. The warm weather is back, and that's a relief after 2 weeks of chilly stuff. We have several guests with us here in the studio for the next segment of the program. We're going to be talking about the Center for Community Resources. We're going to be talking about the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources. Are they related? Are they analogous? Well, we'll find out. We'll find out about some of the services that are available as well. Let me go around the table here and introduce our guests. First of all, I'll just go in order here. Amber Davis. Amber, nice to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And you are with the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources, right?
Yes.
Is that, in fact, an arm of CCR or analogous or related somewhat?
No, we have separate boards. We're separate entities.
Oh, okay. Are you in the same building?
We are not.
Are you in the same town?
We are.
My guess is I'm not the only one that's a little bit confused by the name. So that's one of the things we want to straighten out here today. Also with the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources is Tina Gibbs. Tina, good to see you again. Nice to have you back with us.
You too. Thanks for having us all in.
Yeah. And also here is Haley Merchant. Haley is with the Center for Community Resources. Haley, nice to have you here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Whenever I write to Center for Community Resources, I always write it as CCR.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then, the first thing that comes into my mind is Creedence Clearwater Revival. Am I the only one to do that?
You're not.
Well, tell me a little bit while I'm talking to you here, Haley. What is the Center for Community Resources? I think a lot of people would know you're on South Main Street, your headquarters, right?
Correct. We are on South Main Street. Mm-hmm. I like to call us a big hub for resources for the Butler County area and as well as the surrounding counties. We offer a wide array of programs, anywhere from early intervention all the way up to our aging and disability services. Mm-hmm. So mixed in the middle, we have our crisis services for anybody who should be having a mental health crisis or just needing to talk out to somebody. We have drug and alcohol services. And I feel like one of the great best services that we do offer are our information and referral services. And basically what that is it's a team of about five or six individuals who just go out and find different resources in the community. So for anybody, regardless of income, marital status, you just give us a call and we'll do the legwork for you to try to get you connected to the resources that you need.
I'm trying to remember, and my memory's a little vague on this, when the Center for Community Resources was established and when it got going. I'm guessing that this is probably before your time with them. I really don't have any idea. I was going to say 12, 15 years, something like that. Anybody have any idea?
15 years.
Is it 15? Okay. Mm-hmm. Just a guess on my part. But that's how I remembered it as being, the initial mission statement. I was covering the county commissioners' meetings at that time, and I remembered it as being described as, this will be a hub, an informational and referral hub for people who may have any of a variety of problems but not know exactly where to turn, where to go. So you still do that, huh?
We do that. Our primary mission is to make a positive difference in everyday lives by connecting individuals to a network of supports and services.
Mm-hmm. So can I give you an example and you tell me if it's right?
Sure.
If there's somebody who has... I don't know. They have they've lost the heat in their home for some reason, and it's January, and they're not quite sure where to go, where to turn. A call to CCR, well, then they could help direct them to where to call.
Correct. Within CCR, we actually have it's called the single point of contact for utilities.
That's the phrase I was trying to think of, and it wouldn't come to me. Yeah, single point of contact.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so what we do is we. Really, it's just one phone call. You make one phone call to us. We do the legwork for you, trying to connect you to the different resources and different funding opportunities in the community. And that one phone call that we give back to you, we will have a plan for you as to what next steps you need to take to get your utilities either turned back on or the utility terminated, the utility shutoff terminated.
Isn't there a master switchboard there? You can just call in and then you'll be directed to where to go?
At CCR?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So just give us a call at the 724-431-3700 number or the 0095 number.
We'll give those numbers again. I was going to ask, are you in the phone book? I don't know. A lot of people don't have phone books anymore. You know, it's kind of gone the way of the buggy whip. So we'll give that number a few more times. And you could always look you up online, too.
Yes, you can.
Sure. By the way, was it indeed created by the county? Am I remembering that correctly? Does anybody know? Senator, you weren't there then.
Wasn't there.
Yeah, because we haven't always had this. You know, it's a relatively new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not a lot of other counties do have that. So we're very fortunate here in Butler County to have CCR in the county to just add that extra level of support to our county residents, our county members.
Amen to that. Well, let's talk now about the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources. Tina Gibbs, why am I confused? Why am I commingling you two? What's goofy with me here?
Well, there is absolutely nothing goofy with you. And as a relative new hire to the company, I can agree that it does get a little confusing, and that's what we're working on fixing. Alliance for Nonprofit Resources essentially handles more of the management, administrative type of services. So if you were in the need for if you're a nonprofit organization and you feel like your finances are going a lot to your back-end services more than to your mission to serve people, you can contract with us and we can help you work out those details, whether it's writing grants, doing additional marketing, whatever that case might be. with CCR, CCR is really our social services arm. Mm-hmm. So CCR handles a lot of the, like Haley had mentioned, you know, crisis, you know, dealing a lot with the public on more of that one-on-one basis with individuals in the communities. And then we have another branch called NDC, the Nonprofit Development Corporation, and they are a property management and construction arm. So between the three, we have some similarities in staff. I do the marketing for all three, for example. So there's some overlay between that. But as far as the three agencies go, they have very, very different purposes and very different missions.
So you're dealing, Amber, then mainly with agencies, nonprofit organizations?
Yes, not just nonprofit organizations, but the mission of the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources is to provide a network of quality administrative and operational supports and services essential for other agencies, nonprofits, small business, and programs to actively engage in the community to help fulfill their mission. Mm-hmm. So that's a big mission statement. So what that means is, for example, you're a small business, you can't afford an IT department. Well, we have an IT department that we can lease out to you at a very reasonable cost to support a nonprofit.
I'm smiling, Amber, only because the top grossing film at the box office in the United States this past weekend was It, by it's an adaptation of a Stephen King novel. I don't read Stephen King anymore. I haven't read him for years. And it's not the type of movie that I would go to see. In fact, I'm laughing because the first time I saw the trailer, I thought it was about information technology. Because it just puts this big IT up on the screen. I don't know what the heck they were talking about. So forgive me for laughing a little bit whenever you said if you're a small business and you can't afford an IT department, information technology. I'm guessing, too, that certainly small business, a lot of social service agencies would not have the financial resources to have a lot of these departments either, right? I mean,
correct.
What resources they can scrape together, they've got to go to their mission, right?
Right. So we offer a lot of administrative services in addition to IT. As far as HR support, we could provide you with an HR professional to help you through any
to help you hire.
Transitions, to help you hire, dismiss, whatever your need would be. Mm-hmm. We also offer grant writing. Marketing services. We can lease out Tina's time to help you with great marketing, make some brochures for you. Also, we have a transportation division that's known as A&R Transport. So this is going to be a big calendar year coming up for us. We hope to expand across 29 counties to help with transportation.
Well, what does A&R Transport do? What kind of transportation are you talking about?
Medical appointments primarily, but we also do private contracts. We can build a route to meet your need. So you would reach out to us, let us know what your need is, and then we could discuss if we could make that happen for you or not.
So we have BART here locally. Is there still BART, Butler Area Rural Transit?
We do have BART. We actually manage BART.
Oh, okay.
A&R manages BART also.
I was going to say, I hope you're not knocking BART out the door here.
No, so BART is more focused towards our seniors and people with disabilities to be transported on BART. Then we also have in Butler County the Medical Assistance Transportation Program, which A&R also manages, mm-hmm. and that's for individuals who qualify for medical assistance and need transportation to doctor's appointments free of charge. And then we also created A&R Transport, which is through the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources, and that's our own division with our own drivers and our own vehicles.
See, this is all new to me, and I'm suspecting that it's new to a lot of our listeners as well. So has the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources been around for a long time?
A&R has been around since 2008.
Mm-hmm. So 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And does it operate under the umbrella of the county? Was it created by the county, or are you totally independent?
Totally independent.
How are you funded?
Different funding streams, multiple contracts.
Mm-hmm. With a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, mm-hmm. it's terrific stuff, but it costs money. Transportation alone costs money. And in the last couple of weeks, about 30 cents a gallon more, as a matter of fact, for all of that. Yeah. So you help with the marketing of these either small businesses or nonprofits, Tina?
Correct.
Now, in what way? Give us a hypothetical example there.
Let's say that you want to have a fundraising event to try to bring in some money, whether it's a dinner, a dance, silent auctions, any kind of thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to make brochures, you want to make flyers, maybe make a post to a Facebook page that's a little bit more creative than just doing a standard post with text.
And you don't have anybody on staff who could
exactly
do that.
And not to mention, some of the programs that you need to do that stuff is not inexpensive programs. So for a nonprofit to be able to go out and hire their own marketing person or a graphics person can get a little pricey for them, especially when you're maybe just doing, you know, 4 or 5 events a year.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you needed mailings to be able to do fundraising, direct mail, and you didn't want it to just be a standardized letter, you wanted something that was had a little bit more pizzazz to it, we can work with you on that. In regards to the three organizations, a lot of the social media, we have websites, we have social media sites, we have a ton of publications. And those are all things that fall in underneath what I do there now.
Do you do some of this graphic designing yourself? Do you have people on staff who do this?
Right now it's just me. We are talking about doing some expansion, maybe to help out with some of the marketing things, mostly because there is a lot of confusion. There's a lot to take in with these agencies, and there's a lot that they can offer to the county and the region. We just have to work at getting that word out to the people that need us the most.
How do people align themselves with you? Do they have to apply? Is there a screening process or something to make sure that they meet the eligibility requirements? Or are there eligibility requirements?
Well, some of it depends on what it is that you'd be looking for. We're willing to we can sit down and talk through what your needs are. Maybe you have multiple needs. So you need, you know, the technology support and marketing, or you may need the HR services to help with your hiring or your policy manuals, mm-hmm. or board orientation type of programs. We can, you know, sit down, talk through what your back office business needs are and help you with all of that. It's just a simple phone call to the office.
That's it. Huh?
That's it.
Do agencies and small businesses pay you for your services? Is there a fee structure of some sort?
There is a fee structure of some sort, and that's essentially based on what level of service is needed. So there's not necessarily a flat rate to be quoted. It would be more, you know, if you needed just a flyer made, there would be we would have to sit down to figure out what would be needed with that. Do you need someone to take photographs for you to put it together? Do you just need text? But we're able to customize our services in terms of the A&R offerings pretty much to whatever someone needs and find ways to make that work for you.
Hmm. We have more time with our guest listeners. I have to take a quick break here, so we'll do that. And then we'll come back and learn more about both the Center for Community Resources and the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources here in Butler County. Listeners, were you familiar with that? I mean, this is good stuff that's being done here. Were you familiar with all of this? One of our sponsors on the program today is Goin Postal Butler. Goin Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. What they do a lot of things, but among other things, they package your items for shipping. And what a great service. I mean, this, I know for me, what a bag when you have a package to mail, right? You never can find the stuff. When's the, Ethel, where are those mailing labels? And do you need that special tape, you know? Why not let Goin Postal Butler do it for you? They package your items for shipping, whether you got one or 20. And you can ship them any way you want. Your choice, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. Hmm? Goin Postal Butler is located just off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane. You know where the two restaurants are, King's and Villa Grande? It's right behind there, right behind those two restaurants. I'll give you the phone number in a second. They have other stuff there, too, in addition to packaging your items for shipping. They have copying service, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes if you need those, greeting card, need to pick that up at the last minute, lottery ticket. They're an official notary as well. Sometimes you need that when you're getting ready to put a package out. Going Postal Butler. Phone number is 724-841-0044. Your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Going Postal Butler. Shockey Lane. Within the Shockey Mini Storage there, right behind Villa Grande and King's off Newcastle Road. We're talking with guests from, first of all, the Center for Community Resources. Haley Merchant is with us. And two guests from the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources, Tina Gibbs and Amber Davis. Let's shift back over here, talk with Haley a little bit now that I have a little bit better understanding of the operation here. You're mainly dealing with social services for individuals, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Is there a fee for individuals who call you for help or guidance?
There's no fee.
They just call you and you can tell them where to go.
Correct. No fee, no financial threshold that you have to meet. It's all completely free.
I say that jokingly, of course, but a lot of people are at their wits' end sometimes when they're, sometimes it's a crisis situation and they're really not quite sure where to turn. And they really just need, okay, here's the way you would go first. Here's who you'd call first, so on and so forth. That's what you do for them, right?
Correct. We just provide resources to point them in the right direction.
Do you, during regular business hours, or do you have a hotline at other times or something like that?
So we are open Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., and on Fridays, 8 a.m. till 4:30.
Mm-hmm. And people call you. They don't stop in?
You can stop in or call.
Okay. And it's at the Center for Community Resources on South Main.
Correct. 212 South Main Street.
Right across from Miller's Shoes. It's directly across the street, I think, from Miller's Shoes.
Yes,
it?
We are.
Yeah. By the way, nice fix-up of that building. That is, I assume your office is in there.
It is. It
historic is. Building. I still have the tin ceiling in there, you know? Last time
yes,
I was.
Yes, it
that,
does.
That is classic from long, long ago, you know, when that building was constructed. Anyway, a little parenthetical, but I was impressed when I was in there. It was nice. Sometimes when you repurpose a building, when you rehab a building, it's just, you know, it's just gone. It's a shambles. That's the first thing I noticed when I went there. Wow, look, they saved that tin ceiling. That's great. Yeah. Phone number again for to get in touch with you folks at the Center for Community Resources?
Is 724-431-0095 is our administrative line. And if you just had a simple question for our information referral department, you can call 724-431-3748.
You have trained people that answer these phones here?
Yes, they mm-hmm. are given a huge extensive training for about the first 6 weeks that they are hired.
Mm-hmm.
And then we continue with trainings, and we also continue doing outreach to the communities because the resources are always being updated. So our resource database is only going to be as good as we are. So going out into the community and talking to other nonprofits and churches to update that resource list is an ongoing, everyday job for us.
My engineer tells me he needs you to get just a little closer to that microphone for me, Haley. That's grand. Yeah. Are there other services other than what we've talked about here? And I realize I'm just scratching the surface here. Are there other services available through the Center for Community Resources?
Yes, there are a lot of other services. We have housing programs for those who are chronically homeless and housing programs for those who are veterans, either honorably discharged or dishonorably discharged. We have case managers that would be able to connect you to rental assistance for either, you know, first-time renters or those who are behind on their rents. We have our base service unit, which provides county funding, assessments for county funding for those who don't have insurances but would want to get connected to mental health services.
Okay. Housing program for veterans. Some veterans have a problem with that, you know, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Special needs. There,
yes.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And again, they just call you?
Yes, just give us a call.
Wow. And the second thing you mentioned there, help to find insurance coverage for mental health services?
Yes, we do provide assistance with applying for medical coverage as well as medical assistance. And we also offer the assessments to get those people who don't have insurance connected to county funding so that they can become connected to service providers.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I think I'm feeling that we can emphasize here, if you're not sure whether the Center for Community Resources can help you, if you're not sure, call them anyway.
Correct. Correct.
If nothing else, you can direct them to another place where they either need to call or to go visit, right?
Correct. We operate on a philosophy of no wrong door. So just come through our door. You're not going to be turned away, and we're going to be able to just get you to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. It's a scary time for some people when they don't know where to turn.
Yeah, it is. And now that you mention this, I'm remembering more of whenever this whole program was started, and that was one of the big things. A lot of people not knowing where to turn would, quite frankly, waste time. They would go to this particular agency and say, well, I'm sorry, we're not the ones that can help you on this, but they'd send them somewhere else, maybe in another part of town, another town, mm-hmm. and you end up, you know, people don't have time to do this. But with the Center for Community Resources, a phone call, and you can be directed to really where you need to go.
Correct.
Yeah. Good deal. Good deal. Also with us today are Tina Gibbs and Amber Davis. They are both with the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources. I made a note here, Amber, when we were talking, you said that one of the things you're able to provide for either small business or nonprofit is help with HR, mm-hmm. human resources.
Yes.
What most people would think there is if you're hiring someone to bring on staff, interviewing process, so on and so forth, might not know quite how to do that, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. We can offer HR services. We also offer fiscal management services, which I didn't mention, because that can be a burden on people having to worry about keeping track of all their finances all year and then pay their taxes. So we can help with that.
And do you actually have people that come and sit down there at a desk and physically help you?
Yes, we can do it all in-house. We can do all of your back-end work in-house, or we can send somebody over to work with somebody at your agency.
Mm-hmm. The other point you mentioned that I took a note on is from a human resources standpoint, it's not just hiring, but it's releasing or staff that are retiring or moving to another job. We never think about that. I was talking with somebody a couple of years ago who said you have to be able to prepare if a particularly valuable employee is leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't want to say, hey, thanks a lot, see you later. There are some information that they could be most helpful in providing to you before they leave, assuming that it's on amicable terms.
Yes, if you have somebody in a position, for example, an executive director, that would be a very large shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. So we could help with the interviewing process and the recruiting process to help you make the right choice.
What's the lead time on getting help through this particular area of the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources? How long is the waiting list?
There's not a huge waiting list. You would just contact us at 724-431-3663. Tell us what your need is, and we would put you in contact with the correct person and move from there.
Mm-hmm.
As far as transportation services go, those programs are overseen by different entities. So BART is overseen by PennDOT. So there's regulations that you have to follow to get qualified and registered to ride BART. You couldn't just call and say, I want to ride this afternoon. You'd have to have an application approved. And then we would call and let you know how much it would cost for you to ride, depending on where you were going. To qualify or register to ride BART.
By the way, do you have to be a senior to ride BART?
You do not.
Okay.
You do not have to be a senior, but we do have a lot of seniors that we transport.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not limited to seniors. The phone number to register for BART is 724-282-6060. And as far as medical assistance transportation goes, we transport people of any age, 0 to however old, under medical assistance, and that is free appointments to medical appointments, free of cost to the rider. And the 800 number for that, to register for that service, is 1-866-638-0598.
And there are eligibility requirements here too, I would imagine, right?
There are.
Mm-hmm.
There are. So it depends on a case-by-case basis.
You can go over that on the phone when
yes.
you make a phone call?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you talk to a trained call center professional. They would most likely get you enrolled under multiple funding sources, so your transportation isn't limited. You'd be able to possibly go shopping under one funding source, but you'd be able to go to a medical appointment under a different funding source.
Is there a website that has general info on any of this stuff? Do you know?
Well, actually, we are in the process of redoing our websites to try to make it a little bit more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a brand new transportation website that should be out by the end of the month. And it will include all the information that Amber just provided regarding phone numbers, eligibility requirements, and the different lines of transportation that we have. The same with CCR. That's going to have a new website, as well as the Alliance and Nonprofit Development Corporation. So stay tuned. Something to look forward to. But by the end of the month, we will have those up and running. We also have a few Facebook pages. So we have a Facebook page that is live right now with Center for Community Resources. And you can go out there to see different flyers, events that we have coming up, job postings. When we have job availabilities, we'll post those out there as well now. So there's a couple different ways that way as well that you can track down information on us.
Job postings within the Alliance, you mean?
Within the Alliance or within CCR, yes. Mm-hmm. We just had a couple posted the other day and had really good results come back from the posts that we'd put out on our Facebook pages.
Hmm. Well, I'm more of a website guy than a Facebook guy, but mm-hmm. then that's kind of a generational thing, I believe. You know? Yeah.
Well, that's why it's important to have both. So mm-hmm. as soon as we get these new sites up and running, we'll be firing on all cylinders at that point.
I have done that on occasion, gone to both. If you're looking for a phone number, that's the way a lot of people get phone numbers these days. Mm-hmm. You know, because as I said before, where's the phone book? I have no idea. You know, I don't know the last time I looked at one, to be quite frank with you. But either online or from Facebook, you want contact information. I don't think it's necessary to have all the stuff, but contact information is crucial. Yeah. And if you're looking up Center for Community Resources, please put Center for Community Resources, because if you put CCR, you're going to go to Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Exactly.
We know that. What have I missed here? I know I'm only giving this a cursory glance. Oh, I wanted to talk with you, Tina, a little bit about grant writing. I made a note on that because you mentioned it earlier in our conversation. So what's the deal on that? Quite frankly, I've never applied for a grant. I wouldn't know the first thing. First of all, I wouldn't even know what grants are available, let alone starting to write an application. So I'm not alone, I'm sure.
No, not at all. It's actually a very daunting area to kind of delve into. Because you have so many different qualifications that eliminate you from one but give you a leg up in the other. And some are federal grants, some are private corporations, some are foundations. So there's a whole wide variety of grants that are out there. You have to essentially know what it is that you want to do. And then we actually have someone on staff who's a very talented grant writer, and you can sit down with her and talk through, these are our needs. These are what we want to try to do, but we don't have the money to expand it. Would there be grants out there? Or we found a grant, and like you said, I have no idea what to do with it at this point. Mm-hmm. And she can sit down, work with you on many different levels in terms of if you need her to research and write them, very capable of doing that. If you just want someone to give a second set of eyes, a fresh set of eyes to your application, she can do that for you as well and offer some tips and some proofreading. So there's a couple different areas within that she can help, because it is hard. Money's tight these days. And
it's competitive,
grants,
right?
Grants are competitive. Yeah. And so the more help you can get as someone looking for a grant, the better off you are in the end.
And you have to really know the ins and the outs. I can remember a long time ago I had a very good guidance counselor who was offering tips on writing a resume. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, there's going to be other people applying for these jobs. And there are a lot of HR people that they take one look at their resume and, you know, if there are a couple of key things that aren't there or out of place, it's gone. They don't even read to the bottom of the page.
Yes, grants are very much like that.
Yeah.
Because they have a very specific list of check marks they want to mark off. And if they ask you for one page in a 12-point font and you give them a one page in a 14-point font, that you may lose that grant just based on that. Something that simple.
My guidance counselor was right.
I know. Shocking, isn't it?
Thank you very much for stopping in today. Again, we've scratched the surface here. More information is available for any of the stuff that we've talked about. by contacting these agencies, the Center for Community Resources and the Alliance for Nonprofit Resources. We thank Amber Davis, we thank Tina Gibbs, and we thank Haley Merchant for being with us here today. And how about lucky me? I'm a guy alone in a studio with three lovely ladies for the last half hour. It's been my pleasure.
Yes. Oh, thank you very much, Dave.
Nice to have you all here. Hey, more to come. We're going to talk. I was going to say we're going to talk inside baseball on the next. Not really, but we're going to talk a little bit about baseball. Our next guest will be joining us by telephone from San Francisco, I think, California. His name is Emil DeAndres. He was a pretty outstanding young baseball prospect, possibly a professional career. He was only in his early 20s, and he suddenly and very quickly developed rheumatoid arthritis. If you're a baseball pitcher, that's not a good thing. So he's written a memoir, a little bit about baseball, a little bit about life, a little bit about battling RA. So be interesting conversation, I think. Emil DeAndres, he'll join us in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Introducing a new cooking podcast. Now that's a mouthful. This weekly program explores the shared experience of cooking and the challenges of preparing new and different recipes. Discover something new, whether you're a raw beginner or a seasoned pro in the kitchen. New episodes of Now That's a Mouthful are available every Wednesday. Start listening today at nowthatsamouthful.org or on your favorite podcast app.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome, listeners, on the next segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Mullarkey. We're going to be chatting with guest Emil DeAndres. He's visiting with us on the telephone today. It's part baseball story. It's part life story. First of all, Emil, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thanks for having me on.
You were all set for a professional baseball career about 8 or 9 years ago. You were coming off a record-breaking career in college, Division I, college baseball player. You were in your early 20s. You had just been offered a contract to pitch professionally in Europe. And then what happened, Emil?
Well, this is interesting because it all happened kind of in the same month, which I think is fairly improbable. I was set to go pitch over in Europe, and in that same month, I started to feel sort of a burning sensation in my left elbow. This is my pitching elbow.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a small flame was being held to it. And I was used to playing through these kinds of little pains. When you pitch your whole life, you end up waking up with those things sometimes, and usually you pitch through them and you hope they go away. And this one did not. Over the course of a week or so, it got worse. You know, after a couple cortisone shots, the swelling did not go away. Instead, it spread to other parts of my body, my knuckles and my right wrist, and et cetera. And so suddenly I was no longer going to a sports doctor, but I was going to a rheumatologist where I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis.
Now, you were in your early 20s, right?
Yes.
Don't we ordinarily associate arthritis with folks at a much older age, Emil?
Yeah, and rheumatoid arthritis as well. Rheumatoid arthritis is a little bit different than regular osteoarthritis, the kind that we associate with, you know, pain as a result of overuse throughout someone's life. That's usually osteoarthritis, but mm-hmm. rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune condition, meaning you don't really have to have done anything or caused any sort of repeated trauma over time to get rheumatoid arthritis. You kind of just wake up with it. I think in my book, I refer to it as kind of like the evil tooth fairy, because you just wake up, you go to bed, you get visited by this sinister spirit, and suddenly it's with you for the rest of your life. So, but you're right. Even rheumatoid arthritis it doesn't usually visit people until they're middle-aged, or and it's usually women going through menopause. So I was a 23-year-old man suddenly waking up with, for all intents and purposes, an old woman's disease.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit about your career as a baseball player. Did you realize that you were, you know, pretty good whenever you were just a young kid?
You know, as a young kid, you want to be good, but it's tough to sort of sort yourself out. It's tough to have the perspective of your talent. As a young kid, you just kind of go out there and play, and so that's kind of what I did. I know being a lefty helps me out on the mound a lot, just because in the history of baseball, people have a harder time hitting lefties, and coaches thus favor lefties a little bit more, having them on their team. So I kind of always got the nod, even though I was never really throwing that hard throughout my career. I probably threw low 80s, mid 80s on a very good and fortunate day. So going through college, I was kind of like a left-handed specialist. I pitched a whole ton, but I wasn't like a draft pick. I didn't have scouts coming no one had their eyes set on paying me a bunch of money to go throw 82 miles an hour for their Major League Baseball team. So, but I did know that I had kind of some longevity in my arm, and I had the ability to throw strikes, and I knew that that could benefit a program professionally somewhere. And so that was why I wanted to sort of continue playing baseball.
Emil DeAndres, our guest listeners, has written about, it's a memoir, really. The title is Hard to Grip, a memoir of youth baseball and chronic illness. Hard to grip, referring to the fact that in many cases when a person is battling arthritis, they find it difficult to grip things, sometimes to pick up a glass or open a door, let alone throw a baseball, Emil.
That's right, yeah. And so the disease, as a 23-year-old, was kind of tough to get used to, because I would, you know, a month before I was kind of in the physical prime of my life, and I was used to, you know, lifting heavy weights and kind of being a fearless, testosterone rich kind of guy. And so suddenly, like you said, I was having a hard time opening doors or getting into my car and turning the key in the ignition, and shaking someone's hand it used to be a demonstration of respect and, you know, kind of manhood in a weird way. And now, like, it's just shaking anyone's hand felt like my hand is being, you know, put through a wood chipper. Mm-hmm. And it was tough to, it got tough to even brush my teeth. Like, things even that I never thought twice about my life, suddenly I had to plan in advance for and sort of prepare myself for. And so it was really As much as it was physically difficult or challenging to sort of acclimate to, it was also quite psychologically challenging to sort of wrap my mind around.
You grew up on the West Coast, is that right, Emil?
Yeah, I'm out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And where did you play? Because you played Division I college baseball. Where was that?
That was at University of Hawaii, Hilo. I pitched in a tournament out there my senior year. I was struggling to get recruited, just like I said earlier. I never threw very hard. So, Division I guys, they like velocity. They like, you know, fastballs coming up in the upper 80s, low 90s. I think that's something they can work with. Low 80s is kind of something I think that they feel they might have a hard time working with and seeing successful at their level. So, I had a hard time getting recruited, but my senior year I went and pitched a tournament out in Hawaii, and the coach for Hawaii Hilo happened to see me that night, and so I think he saw some of my intangibles, and he saw some other things, some nuances in my game that I think he thought translated to his type of program.
I want to make sure that our listeners understand that, yes, this is a story of baseball and your chronic illness, the sudden onset of rheumatoid arthritis, but this is also a memoir of your life during those years, correct? I mean, other things were happening, including meeting your future wife. And you talk about that in the book.
Yeah, I do. I meet her in college, and it's in an English class. And it ends up being a time in my life, at least retrospectively, I know this now, a time in my life where I really needed some... I needed someone to sort of settle me down, because I was kind of a rambunctious college athlete. I thought it was kind of like my artistic license as a baseball player to sort of be rebellious and strong-headed and kind of have a late curfew, if you will.
You mean like the guys of Delta House in Animal House?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe I aspired to be them. I don't think I achieved their status, but and I ended up getting into some trouble a little bit, and so I met her at a really, really good time, and she ended up being a real integral part of just my whole process of getting this disease and coming to terms with it and figuring out what to do with my life and figuring out how to find a job and figuring out what my new passions were going to be now that baseball had been taken from me. And she was just a very strong presence for me. And so naturally, having gone through all of that with her by my side, I couldn't imagine living life without her. And so, yeah, we've been married now for a year and a half, but we've been together for, 7 or 8 years.
Hmm. We're talking, listeners may have joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn. Emil DeAndres, author of Hard to Grip, a memoir of youth baseball and chronic illness. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. I know that much. I also know that there are a variety of different treatment methodologies that, from what I've read, even the best physician just kind of, hit and miss. They'll try one thing, they'll try another thing. Some things work for some people, not for others. Have you been able to get any relief at all from your rheumatoid arthritis, Emil?
Yeah, and you're right. It really is. There is no exact science to treating rheumatoid arthritis. Everybody's body is different in the way it sort of functions with this kind of weird disease, and not much is known about it. I have found meds that work. They're called biologic medications. A lot of people are prescribed them. There's all different kinds. I think on TV now, I think they're getting more popular just because every time I turn on the television, there's a commercial for them now. So they must have the money to be advertising so much. But Humira is a big one. I think Xeljanz is another big rheumatoid arthritis treatment.
Mm-hmm. Enbrel, Phil Mickelson
Enbrel
is pushing
is a
Enbrel.
Huge
yeah.
One. Yeah. Phil Mickelson, exactly. Those are out there and they're effective. I'm on one that's similar to Humira. I was on Humira for a while, and it's interesting. Like, I'm sure any listeners out there who have rheumatoid arthritis have experiences as well. You can even be on a medication that's working, to your judgment, pretty well. Like, it's sort of held off some of the worst symptoms. You found a way to be functional and perhaps even active in your life with this medication, and then your doctor will want to switch you off and try something new. And I've never quite understood why that is the case, but I had that experience, and I kind of documented a little bit in my book. So it's curious. But I have found treatment, and I'm lucky also because I haven't suffered through any sort of excruciating side effects, which can be a real issue. It's a real factor for people taking rheumatoid arthritis medication is the potential side effects, which oftentimes, at their worst, are worse than the disease itself. I'm lucky, but I know that there's other cases out there that have not found that perfect mix yet.
One of our sponsors on the program today, DBS Telecommunications. They are a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer here in the Butler area, and also the entire Pittsburgh area, for that matter. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. Folks, DBS Telecommunications has been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. We know them very well here at WISR and the Butler Radio Network because we've been using their technicians and their expertise for many, many years. They specialize in phone systems, custom-designed networks, including fiber optics, quality hybrid digital telephone systems, high-definition surveillance camera systems, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. They also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. They know their stuff. In fact, we had a technician from DBS Telecommunications here in our studios just a week or so ago. I saw him. Yeah, DBS Telecommunications. Call them today for more info, 724-285-9088. 724-285-9088. They're also on the web at dbs-tel.com. DBS Telecommunications.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch. It's Meals on
Wheels. 1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Emil DeAndres, our guest listeners, has written about, it's a memoir, really. The title is Hard to Grip, a memoir of youth baseball and chronic illness. Well, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, Emil, your name is not a household name in terms of being a baseball player. You're not Verlander or Arrieta or, for older listeners, Koufax. But actually, part of the appeal of your story, because, you know, you're more like an ordinary guy battling this, you know?
Yeah, I think people can relate to the everyman aspect of my book, for sure. And being an underdog in a lot of different aspects in life. But it's funny you mentioned Koufax, because his career actually ended, specifically Sandy Koufax. His career ended prematurely, kind of at its peak, due to some sort of form of rheumatoid arthritis as well. Mm-hmm. He got like an early premature sort of arthritic condition that they think has something that they think is autoimmune. So it's funny you mentioned that, but yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was, I don't know the timing. Obviously he pitched for the Dodgers. Baseball fans will know that. They were out in Los Angeles, right, when Koufax was pitching with them. They weren't still in Brooklyn. What am I thinking about, for goodness sakes?
Yeah, they were in L.A.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Well, it was accidental that I mentioned him. I was just searching my brain for a pitcher's name that everyone would recognize. One of the reviews I read of your book, Emil, the title, listeners, is Hard to Grip, Emil DeAndres. One of the reviews I read said, you have the voice of a natural storyteller, which is kind of unusual, especially in a newer author. Do you plan to explore writing as a career, or if not, what do you plan to do with your life?
Writing as a career would be excellent. I think the amount of hard work and luck is something that is, you know, paramount in finding that career. And I'm certainly interested in pursuing it. I have a master's of fine arts in creative writing, and I teach English at a community college about 20 miles south of San Francisco, so I'm sort of inundated in the written word, and I'm happily so. And so, you know, I'm always going to be writing. Writing is sort of the passion that took baseball's place when I could no longer play it anymore. And so, it's something that is present in my everyday life, and it's something that's not going away. It's like a psychological, meditative, therapeutic activity. So I know it's not going anywhere, and if it continues to lead to published books, then that's ideal.
Let me talk about the appeal of baseball as we wrap up here today, because it was known for a long time as America's pastime. I'm not sure that it is anymore. I don't know about you out on the West Coast, Emil, but gosh, here in Western Pennsylvania, we I can remember in the summertime, you'd see kids on their way to the Ball Diamond all the time, you know? They'd be on their bicycle. They'd have a glove hanging from the handlebars and a bat on the handlebars heading to play ball.
Yeah.
We just don't see that a lot anymore, at least. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just in the wrong places or something like that. Do you think that the incredibly high money that's flying around and free agency, that it's hard to, you know, you develop a liking for a favorite player and the next thing you know, he's gone. You know, he's off to Texas or Boston or somewhere. Do you think that's having an effect, the whole monetary issue of baseball these days?
You know, I don't know. I don't know what would cause. I think just living in 2017, I think kids' interests are sprawled all over the place because of technology, and I think I have opinions on the sort of shrinking attention spans of America in general, and baseball's a tough game to be interested in if you have a short attention span. So I think that has something to do with it, but I kind of have a skewed perspective on it just because I'm always around the game, so I'm always seeing people that love the game. And I, you know, I've lived in San Francisco ever since college, and so I've been around for three World Series wins. And so in my everyday world, where I'm coaching baseball for two different teams and, you know, living in San Francisco where there's a strong baseball culture, I'm not seeing too much of it sort of waning or disappearing. And I'm definitely not seeing it disappear in lieu of other sports or anything else. I would just say in general, if people are losing interest, it might just be because they're incapable of being interested in something that there's like 30 seconds in between each pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And by the fifth inning, it's still 0-0, and you know, and the whole game takes two hours, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Here in Western Pennsylvania, of course, you know, everybody's a Pirate fan, and the Pirates have been trying to come out of the doldrums, and they're showing some signs of life. Playoffs a couple of years in a row, but certainly no World Series like you've had out in San Francisco, that's for sure. But
right.
You're absolutely right. Baseball is the reason that a lot of people love it is because it's a slow-paced game. It's not like football or basketball where it's constant motion, bada-bing, bada-bing, bada-bing. It's a relaxing game, and if you don't approach it that way, then you're probably going to find it boring, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it is very cerebral, and that's why there's so much butting of heads currently about all the different little changes that people are trying to propose to the game to speed it up, and having, like, clocks, countdown clocks that for pitchers, they can't take longer than a certain amount of time before in between pitches, or else they cough up a ball. Or I know in the minors, extra innings now, they tried this at least last year, putting a guy at second base to begin an inning, just to speed up the scoring process. Which, speaking of which, in the minor leagues, I one of the prominent characters in my book played for the Altoona Curve for a couple of years.
Mm, yes.
And so there's some references in the book to his minor league days. His name was Charlie Cutler. He was on the Altoona for a couple of years, and actually went out and watched him play one time.
The only team that I know of named after a railroad track, the Altoona Curve.
It's a beautiful stadium. I loved sitting there with the theme park out in right field and everything like that. It was really a true like baseball experience.
Mm-hmm. And the newer parks are they're great too, because they've gone back to an older look. They haven't copied Fenway and Wrigley, but they don't all look like cookie cutter stadiums anymore like they did 30 years ago either. And that's a step in the right direction, I think.
Right on.
But baseball purists, I'm sure, are holding their nose and shaking their heads when you talk about starting a game by putting a man on second base.
Yeah, no, it's really bizarre. I'm a purist myself. I think the people that love the game are going to love the game because it's the game they grew to love. You know, I don't think any fringe fans are suddenly going to be led into fandom by hearing that in extra innings you start a guy at second base. It's cheap and tainted.
Yeah. Listeners, the title of the book is Hard to Grip. Hard to Grip, a memoir of youth baseball and chronic illness by our guest for the last few minutes here on It's Your Turn, Emil DeAndres. Emil, nice to meet you. Thanks for chatting with us here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. So long now.
All right.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 8484. The pick 3, 273-273. The pick 4, 0284. The pick 5, 45643. The wild ball for each of those is 2. The treasure hunt is 3, 5, 10, 17, and 18. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $80,000.
One of our sponsors on the program today, Butler Motor Tours. A lot of folks